Unfortunately, in order to successfully pass my M1 year, my personal relationships and my physical and mental health plummeted as I struggled to stay afloat with all the course material. Our relationship really struggled during that time, and he really barely saw me look up from studying. Our relationship definitely was injured that first year. Welcome to Life as a Patient Doctor. I'm your host, Stephanie Moss, navigating life as a patient and a future MD. Walk alongside me as I reflect on the challenges and lessons I have learned undergoing medical school with invisible disabilities. Join me as I interview other doctors, students, and healthcare workers on their own journeys. Listen to their unique stories on how they have balanced their health while caring for others in the health profession. Today, I will be going over the blog post, Journey Through Medical School, M1 Year. First picture is my computer. On the screen, I'm watching a video on starvation and the alanine cycle. Favorite place to study that my husband and I would go every weekend during medical school. It was the Morden Arboretum. There were beautiful windows, and we would just sit there, study for hours, get up, do a mini hike, come back, and study. I'll speak a little bit about that later, but that is that picture. So I start. My first year of medical school, M1, was challenging for all the normal and expected reasons. New city, new house, new school, and a new academic curriculum. However, only through reflection, 3 years later, what truly became salient was my willingness to let my academics overshadow my personal relationships, my mental and physical health. While going through the online school curriculum, I first tried to rewrite my own notes as I watched the pre-recorded videos and read through the 60 to 100 page coursework. And so this is important for our medical school and a lot of other medical schools. They've transitioned from, instead of being in a lecture where you would sit and learn for many hours a day, kind of like college, this time they've turned it so you can do that part, that learning at home on your own pace, which is really helpful. And then we come in for an in-person class where we discuss cases together and through a smaller group environment. So we are receiving 60 to 100 pages of coursework that we had to get through within 1 to 2 days. So I would spend at least 12 hours of each day writing notes and trying to absorb the content. When it came to the practice questions at the end of the assignment, I rarely had time or the mental energy to read through them before our 8 a.m. in-person class. During this class, we are placed in small table groups of 5 to 6 classmates where we work through cases and questions. At the end of these 4 hours, we would have a challenging online quiz over the reading. And I remember this specific group classes, we would do it in a huge classroom, but they were like subdivided. They had put those like movable barriers. And so we would all sit and complete an online quiz. The amount of outside resources available was very overwhelming, and I didn't know which ones to use. Inky note cards was the most talked about resource. So Jonah, my husband, and I purchased Switch remotes and downloaded the medical school created decks to use on our computer. There were over 30,000 cards in total, so it was near impossible to review in connection to the clerkship material. I then tried creating my own virtual class flashcards and downloading some from the upperclassmen and peers. I would then spend hours going through old note card ones and rarely had time to even learn new ones. They piled up very easily, and seeing the number need to review as it increased just gave me extreme anxiety. Even when I worked towards answering them within 6 to 7 seconds, there was just not enough time in the 24-hour day to complete them in addition to my coursework. And I have a picture of an Anki card for those who don't know it. So like it's a virtual platform where you can either use decks that have been created by other students or make your own or do a combination. So on the screen, I have a picture of a sample question with a fill in the blank, and then you would tap it and it would turn around and you can have different pictures in addition to the answer to kind of have other resources to learn more. And you could select either, again, good or easy. And you could actually change when you would next see the card again. So they would pile up because I would either say put again or good. And the ones that I put easy, it would be multiple days until it would show me again. So the idea is really good. It has a lot of science behind it. However, in addition to all the medical school curriculum that we had to do, for me, it was too much. And that's okay. I'll talk about that again later, but it's okay if not every single thing works for you. There are different types of learning styles. There are different types of ways to learn. There are different types of content and things to use for help. For me, even though note cards are helpful in theory for me, this particular resource was just too much. So next I read. It seemed like a miracle that I passed, which was above 70% on every block that first year. But I did it. Unfortunately, seeing the average score in my class, that it was 85%, when I barely scored a passing score, which was like in the 70s, in the low 70s, built a sense of inadequacy and an unintelligence. That's really where imposter syndrome really started coming in. We were told that we were all part of the top 1% of academic achievers. So of course, we would feel inferior to our peers. However, learning that knowledge and actually getting over my imposter syndrome was very difficult. However, having that knowledge didn't really help my imposter syndrome. It is still there. I talk about in other blog posts and podcast episodes, the difference in my medical school class. A lot of the other students came from high-income families who had physicians and scientists in their class, other ones who could provide resources and suggestions because they had close family members or friends, families that could provide private tutor and paying. And there was a lot of differences, and I'll talk a little bit more. Further realizations start to become salient over time in medical school of the different disadvantages I possess compared to my peers. First, only a handful of my 144 classmates were from a Hispanic background, and those who were in the racial minority category were commonly placed in the needing extra academic support groups. I remember it was after my first block exam. I passed it, which was above 70%, and we didn't have grades. All it needed was above a certain percentage to pass or fail. But since I scored low compared to my peers, I was placed in one class with a tutoring instructor, which was just a student in the class above us. And I remember being so embarrassed going to that because I was like, wait, I passed. Like, yeah, I want more help. I want to receive support, but it was very embarrassing. And I felt kind of stupid to be invited there. And then as I looked around to my other classmates, it was very interesting to note that a lot of them were students in the underrepresented medicine. So a lot of the Black and Brown students were all in that group. And a lot of the low-income students were also in that group. And it was maybe just like 20 of us that were invited to partake in this extra one-hour tutoring session. But it was definitely one of the first times that I started to notice the differences in how that affects academics. Second, many of my peers graduated from Ivy League or similar private school undergraduate universities when I actually only graduated from a state college. My husband and I were from Colorado, so we went to the University of Colorado in Boulder. I knew, especially in high school, where I actually went to a public high school that was relatively affluent, and a lot of students did go to Ivy League institutions, but I didn't. One, because I did do IB and AP classes in high school, but I didn't get like my IB diploma or my full AP certificate. At least that was the reasoning I always told myself. And then I didn't do really good in the ACT and SAT. So that was in my mind why I didn't get accepted to those higher institutional schools. So I just went to the state university, which a lot of people were like, oh, that's a big school. a lot of people know that school. Actually, I was really glad that like 4 students in my class and in the medical school that actually went to the same university. That was always a cool thing that people knew the university, but definitely it wasn't a school that had a really robust pre-med program. Third, there was a significant number of students who had parents and grandparents or just family members who are physicians who provided academics tips, resources, and mentors whom I didn't have access to. This is really important to have family members in the medical field because they can prepare you for a lot of these hidden curriculums, which I'll talk about in future episodes of the podcast, specifically when I talk about M3 year when we're in clinicals. Even when I was taking any of the STEP exams, having family members that had been in the medical school know what can impact your residency application, what cannot impact your residency application, how to make mentors, all these things can be very beneficial and can help students do well. So the fact that my husband nor I had anyone in the medical field definitely was a disadvantage compared to our peers. Unfortunately, in order to successfully pass my M1 year, my personal relationships and my physical and mental health plummeted. The only thing I prioritized above schoolwork was sleep. I knew that from my high school and college years that sleep was the last string that helped keep my body and mind together. If I didn't sleep, my entire world would collapse. I didn't know at the time it was because I struggled with chronic medical illness that necessitated that sleep, but at least that was the one thing that I could determine, like, if I don't sleep, if I don't get my 10 to 11 hours, well, it's gone down, more 8 to 10 hours, then I wouldn't be able to study, things wouldn't stick in my mind, I would go into flares, so things I've learned over time. What I did is I determined that I had to fall asleep between 10 and 11 p.m. each night, whether or not I finished my coursework, which was a difficult decision to make at first because there were definitely some periods at beginning of my M1 year that I just couldn't get through the material. And then I would have to go back after our class and go back and spend 3 to 4 hours finishing up the coursework before starting the next one, which would just perpetually keep me behind. This provided me with enough to stay present during classes and do as best as I could on quizzes and tests. Honestly, I barely remember the details from those months of September 2019 to February 2020. My husband reminded me that I was very distant and only focused on my schoolwork, even though we were in the same medical school and class. We were going through the same curriculum together, which you would think that we could do like study partners, but we learned early on all the way from like our undergraduate, because we also went through undergraduate school. Even though we had different majors, we tried to do at least the pre-med classes together, and we learned that we just have different learning styles. So really just being together in the same room at the same table, that was our studying, and like occasionally ask each other questions if we were confused on stuff or if we needed recommendations on resources. My husband reminded me that our relationship really struggled during that time, and he really barely saw me look up from studying on my iPad and computer. Our relationship definitely was injured that first year, and I struggled to stay afloat with all the course material and content. Even though we made sure we ate most of our meals together, so breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that was our pre-planned, okay, we're going to study, and then we're going to hang out for an hour. That was kind of how we made our schedules. That was actually one of the positives, is that we had a set schedule, because for me, it was really important to know this is the time I'm going to be studying. This is the time I hang out with you. And what we ended up doing was like 8 a.m. start, we started studying. So before 8 a.m., we could have breakfast together. We could have a coffee. But 8 a.m. sharp, I was sitting down studying. He could keep doing his own thing, but I knew for me, I had to be studying by 8 a.m. 8 a.m. to noon. From noon to 1, we would have our lunch break together, and that's when we would eat and watch a TV show. And then 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., again, 4 hours of study, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. is when we would have dinner together, take dogs out, watch a TV show or two while just hanging out, refreshing our mind. 7 o'clock hit, back to studying until it was time to go to bed. So that's what we did every single day that we weren't in classes. And if we were in classes, classes were usually like from 8 to noon or from 1 to 4. So we weren't studying, we were in classes. And that was just what worked for us in our relationship. However, as you can see, it wasn't the best way to maintain a relationship, especially a marriage and being able to connect. So it's been something that we've been working on and have been able to find a better way to work with that schedule. And thankfully, we don't have to spend that many hours just sitting and studying. It was at least to get all our material done and studying. It helped us maintain at least a little bit of sanity. Okay, so I'm talking about our relationship. Our relationship was definitely injured throughout our first year of medical school as I struggled to stay afloat. Even though we ate most of our meals together, a habit we had learned during college, we didn't emotionally connect during our downtime. If we were not eating, we were talking about medical school, even though we kind of make that mistake now, but we've gotten better. And I'll talk about that in other podcasts, the pros and cons of having a husband and a life partner and a best friend who's in medicine. It is definitely, I would not give it back, and it's so helpful. But at the same time, it's hard to disconnect from medicine. We started watching also medical shows. Everyone had always talked about Grey's Anatomy. So we're like, okay, this is the time we're in medical school. And it was a great way to have fun. And then we were still feeling like we were studying a bit. Looking back, that wasn't the healthiest thing to do. We really should have done something completely separated from medicine, which over the past couple of years, we've stopped doing medical shows. We do more like mysteries, psychosocial dramas, comedies. We've tried to stay away from like hard-hitting medicine, and I'll say why. We started watching Grey's Anatomy and watched many seasons during our first year of medical school. We thought it was a great way to fun study because we worked up a lot of cases while going through the show, and they randomly correlated to a lot of the content we were learning in class. We would sometimes get into arguments, though, on who guessed it correctly. But that is our competitive nature. And I'm gonna step away from the blog post and talk a little bit about one episode. I can't even remember exactly which one it was. It was a very significant event in our relationship because we were sitting on the couch. I'll just pretend it was hyperthyroidism. A patient has like anxiety, high heart rate, a lot of different symptoms that could be hyperthyroidism. And so I would yell out like, oh, they have hyperthyroidism, Graves' disease. And then my husband would be, oh, definitely not. It's hypothyroidism. And then we would get into this fight. This is where our competitive nature came in, which seems like a good thing. But we're supposed to like be having fun, enjoying each other's company. But we started to get upset at each other. Here's a little bit more about like our own trauma responses and own argument styles. Like I want to talk, and I get defensive. A lot of the times I would take it personally. Well, I'm still working on it, but like, if my husband says something, I interpret it that he's correct and that he doesn't think I'm smart enough. That is my own personal bias and self-conscious. And so I would fight to say, no, I'm correct. But instead of explaining why I think I'm correct and because of the symptoms, I would just be like, nope, I'm correct. I know this. Like, I would get very defensive. And his response is to shut down and to not fight back and either to stop talking or to say we're done, which would then make me more upset because I feel like that he's abandoning the conversation or again, doesn't think I'm smart enough, that he thinks I'm stupid. All these negative things that are my own challenges, but definitely have impacted our relationship. And thankfully, we've gotten better to how to work through our different trauma responses, how to communicate better. We haven't had a fight like that where we're like, even in a medical case, in many years now, but that's, I believe, only because we've been working so hard on our relationship. Anyway, going back to our first year of medical school, we did not have the mental energy or capacity to communicate effectively because we were so stressed with school that our school was our number one priority instead of our relationship, which we've learned to switch that. And that has been actually one of the biggest things that I took out of my first year, is to learn how important it is to have a support person and to maintain the relationship of that support person. Because if you don't have that support person, then you cannot be successful because you cannot do things alone and you really need someone. So that's a best friend, a family member. You need someone there to be in your corner when things are rough. Going back to the blog post, that was a little tangent there about our relationship. We'll talk more in the podcast episodes. Put down in the comments or send me a message if you're interested in learning more. I think it is an important aspect that I haven't touched on, mostly because I want to respect our relationship and he doesn't like me to talk about it as much. He wants me really to focus on my thing and I want to respect that. Because I'm very open, I want to maintain that barrier. But I think it's still important to at least talk about like lessons that we've learned in order to have this successful relationship. We're upcoming on our 7th year of marriage, which is huge. So it was all during medical school that we've been able to maintain our relationship. But M1 year was actually, it wasn't the hardest. Our leave of absence was the hardest year. Check out my other podcast episodes. I'm not going to get into that. That was our hardest, but this was definitely one of our hardest. Before COVID-19 hit in March of 2020, we would also try to go into the city to study. But our efforts to explore Chicago were kind of fully focused on finding a place to study. Another problem, another thing we've learned, habit that we've tried to get rid of. Then we've gotten better because we don't have that much stuff to study. So that's helped too. So what we would do is anytime we would have a free day or at least a day that we've said, okay, we're going to spend this day to not study at home or not studying in the Morton Arboretum, let's go explore somewhere. So for example, I remember going to the Chicago Aquarium and we would rock around all morning looking for a table instead of relaxing and enjoying the aquatic life. We would spend the entire morning looking for a place to study. Instead of enjoying the aquarium, our goal and mind and soul focus on what is a good spot to sit so we can study. That was a very unhealthy way to do things. And it ended up, we don't even remember the aquarium because we were so stressed and focused on only studying. So eventually, when we did find a place to study, we would only take about 30 minutes to actually break and enjoy. For example, we actually found a spot right above. If you've ever been to the Chicago Aquarium, there was like a little place up above the water show where they have the belugas and the sea lions, I think. And there was a table there. And so we'd sit, we'd study. And then when the show started, we'd watch the show for 30 minutes and then we'd go back to studying. There were specific days in Chicago where they have free days, so we wouldn't have to pay. We could go in for free to the art museum, natural history museum. But again, we would go and then not enjoy the place because we were focused on finding a place to study. And this was not a mentally healthy thing to do. We have a picture. We're very thankful that Jonah's grandmother invited the entire family on a cruise right before COVID. December 2019, we were on a cruise. Don't know how lucky that we missed the COVID, but we were there. And as you can see in this picture on the blog post, we are in one of the dining tables and it was a beautiful place. We thought this was the greatest idea in the world because we were relaxing. We had the beautiful view of the ocean, but what are we doing? We're studying. Actually, there, I'm trying to do inky. So I was trying to do that note card that I told you that was just so much. And we were just known by the family that that's all they do. And thankfully, they were kind of supportive. Oh, no, they were supportive. But it was hard for them to understand because none of them had been in medicine and had ever been to a program that was this intensive. Looking back, I don't know if we actually gained anything during that 1 to 2 week of cruise ship studying. It would have been way more useful to just enjoy the time, take the time off. And that is a huge thing I try to share, is like when you have the opportunity to take time away from school, from your work, take it, because that's how your brain is able to mentally reset and rejuvenate. Your glass, you have to fill up your glass with positive things, with mental health, instead of just draining your cup, draining your cup, draining your cup, because then if your cup is empty, then you can't do anything. When you're a health professional, if you're helping someone, if you have an empty cup, you can't give water to someone else. You can't give compassion to other people. Same thing in school or work. If you're working so hard and you're mentally and physically drained, you have an empty cup, you're not going to be able to do your very best if your mind is not and your body is not well and healthy. And so this is why I wish we would have taken that time on that cruise ship to just enjoy family, enjoy the event. Instead, we were studying. Study, study, and more studying. But we do look happy. My husband looks really tired, which we're on vacation. Why is he tired? Why am I tired? Probably because we're studying. So I constantly drove to perfect my knowledge, which in theory sounds like a good idea and is something that we should all strive for, improve our knowledge. But again, taking time off is important. I tried to do that so I would improve in quizzes and exams. Every moment I had a free time, I would study and try to just absorb as much material as possible. A lot of people always tell you that medicine, it's like drinking through a fire hose, which means you have a lot of information just coming at you as fast as you can. And you have to try to get as much fluid coming in, or you try to drink a little bit. But what I didn't understand until now as a fourth year medical student is that the goal is not to be able to drink the entire fire hose as it's coming towards you. The goal is to get a little bit, understand that little bit, and then get a little bit more. A way that I would think about is if the fire hose is coming out at me, maybe I would get a glass, get a little bit of water, take back, drink it, and then get a little bit more, drink it, and come back. And the reason I say this is because you learn the material multiple times throughout your medical school. You relearn it during step one. You relearn it during your clinicals. You relearn it when you're studying for step two. And not relearning it, but you see it again. And through seeing again, you learn more information and it sticks more. And so I really wish, or people wouldn't get scared that we have to absorb all that information coming to us, because that is overwhelming. And it's supposed to be overwhelming because it is a lot of information. I wish I knew that it was okay to not be perfect. I wish that I knew that it was okay not to know all the information, that the goal wasn't to drink the entire water from the fire hose. That just knowledge, peace, and recognizing that I'm good enough and that what I'm doing is good enough is so important. And I try to pass on to other medical students or other students that what you're doing is enough. You don't have to strive to be perfect, because you're never going to be. That's the point of medicine and education, is that there's always something new to learn. I wish that would have been something that I knew early on. And I like this quote. Perfection is a way to escape feeling unloved and not good enough, by Dr. Tanner Wallace. She's a somatic movement instructor that I learned in my leave of absence, so a couple of years later. It's something that I've worked on throughout my medicine career now and hope to keep working on, is just that knowledge that what I'm doing is enough, because that strive for perfectionism is in fact just a trauma response. trying to meet someone's expectations, including your own expectations, that are not fully possible. And that is so important. Stay tuned for part two. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode. If you would like to learn more about my individual journey or other resources that I use both as a patient and as a physician, check out the resources on my website, medpsychmoss.com. And also you can follow me on any types of social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, X. Stay tuned for part two. Take care, everyone.